welcome to Inside Florida Racing, brought to you by McAllister Sports Management and Carnac.com. Listen as hosts Bill Green and Jack Smith get the inside information directly from the drivers themselves. Now it's time to get Inside Florida Racing.
Race fans, welcome back to another edition of Inside Florida Racing. I'm Jack Smith, and tonight we're going to spend some time with one of those racers you may not hear so much about, but you're going to hear a lot about him tonight, Bobby Sears, the 2006 Pete Orr Sportsmanship Award winner. Hello, Bobby.
Yes, sir.
All right, it's Jack Smith here. How are you doing tonight?
Well, not bad. Glad the weekend's here.
All right. So, Bobby Sears started racing about 25 years ago.
Well, that'd be back when.
I don't know. That's just the number that's been thrown out at me a few times.
We started off a little bit around 68 in the Volkswagen Bug era. I ran the old DeLand dirt track, then went up to Volusian, turned over the first night and went up there.
On the dirt?
Yeah. Well, back then, Volusia, of course, is dirt now, but back then it was like old clay, you know, real hard clay, you know, pretty hard. And Volkswagen Bugs, when you got them loose and they slid down, they hit where the greater berm was down, you know, where the greater leaves this berm down at the bottom.
Yeah.
Just flipped it over and right back on its wheels, you know.
Yeah.
The first win I got was the clay pit there, what they call DeLand. They had a heck of a show over there for, you know, 2 or 3 years. And, you know, some good people in there, Curtis Kreider, and, you know, quite a few people ran in that old, what we call the clay pit. I guess that's what it really was at one time.
So how did you get involved in, you know, what caused you to end up out there at Volusia? How'd you get involved in racing?
I worked for, at that time, it was called Lewis Volkswagen, you know, back in 64, 65. I started there in 64, and I worked there for, until they sold out in 88 when Ron Cadillac bought us out. But there was a guy who worked there, his name, we called him Peanut, his name was Paul Blue. I built the motors for him to run to land. And one time he wanted me to come up there, and I come up there and watched. And the next time he come up there, he said, well, won't you take it out and hot lap it? Well, the next week I was building one. I just thought that was, you know, and all I know is cars.
Right.
You know, I'm not real proud of it, but I don't have a lot of education, so all I know is cars.
Right. So you just got started at a very early age doing that.
I got some pipe and started bending it and welding it in, and borrowed an old Craftsman stick welder, and I welded it all in, and I don't know, one too many nights. Like I say, I won my first race at Indoland. Then they kept bugging us to come up and run. That was on Friday night, I think, come up and run on, you know, Volusia on that oil clay. And, you know, I ran up there for quite a while. Then we ran over to Golden Gate for a long time. You know, it was asphalt, and there's a lot of cars over there. And the Volkswagen Bug did pretty good over there on that flat track.
And now that kind of car, was that like, that was just like what you started out with? I mean, that was what people would start out racing, those kind of cars?
Well, back then, that was the mini-stock division, you know.
Gotcha.
They was Cortinas, you know, the Ford Cortina and the English Ford Anglia.
Sure.
Opals. But, you know, I worked on Volkswagens and air-cooled motor, and, you know, and I got them things pretty darn, you know, pretty darn stout.
Wow, that's amazing. So like back at, you know, like over at the place in Tampa, Golden Gate?
Yeah, it was Golden Gate. I think they didn't tore it down a few years ago.
Yeah, now, from what I understand, there was like 180 cars, wasn't stuff like that, where there was a lot of cars coming out there every Saturday?
There was a lot of cars showed up there. I don't...
Yeah.
They had numbers on the... When you got ready to run your feature, they wanted you to come out and lined up on the number on the straightaway, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, back.
Right.
And these oodles of nights, there's, you know, way over 20 cars there.
Yeah.
You know.
Just in your class.
If you're wondering your number in time, then you had to go to the rear.
Yeah.
They just moved everybody up. So you learn to get your tail out there pretty quick and get on your number.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, because that was your starting position.
So your dad or uncles or anybody like that race?
No, I don't know. I don't. You know, I was born during the war, so I don't know who my dad is.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Like I say, I've been pretty well on my own all my life.
Yeah, so you were born back in, like, the early 40s.
I was born in 44.
44, yeah. Yeah, wow. So nowadays, how do you look at it now when you come and you've been around this a long, long time? You know, what are the main things that you see that have changed from your perspective?
Well, Zach, it's a lot of things that changed. The biggest thing is money. But technology, parts, you know, technology and parts. I can run a year, and next year a lot of my stuff is antique. You know, you got to keep up. If you go run up front, you got to keep up all the time. You know, back then we took and, you know, we put our own, and I still put cages in, but we put our own cages in, built our own motor, built our own transmission. You know, we did, you know, a lot of this stuff. Now you buy a lot of this stuff, you know, like these new Tiger rear ends, you buy them. Of course, I just ordered one and, you know, and I'll put it all together and I'll put my tubes and everything in myself. That's how I keep the cost down. But technology and the amount of money it takes to, you know, to operate this day and age is astronomical.
Yeah, that probably has something to do with why it's a little more harder, I guess, to get large car counts and lots of people racing. I imagine that has a lot to do with it. So, when you when did you really first start winning?
I'd have to look back in them books, but sometime in the 70s.
Yeah.
Maybe in the, you know, like 81, 82, 83, you know, all through there. You know, I ran mini stocks for, I think, 13 or 14 years, and I won 13 or 14 championships at Speed World and Mews Smyrna.
So you won a lot of them. So
I won a lot of, and at one time I was, I don't know if it was the last year I run, because they told me, eventually, they just told me I couldn't run no more.
Right.
They wanted me moved out because they said the people wouldn't come and run because I was running. You know, another, they couldn't get a car count because I was just dominating. I don't know if it's the last year or the year before, but I won 59 features in 1 year.
Holy cow. In the mini stock, 59 features at the two tracks?
Yes, at Speed World and at New Smyrna. I think it was the next of the last year. And then the last year, I told them all I was leaving. I bought me a limited. I won 52, one for each week. You know, and that's just in them 2 years.
So you won 59 in 1 year and 52 in the next?
Right.
Man. I guess you must have had a target on your back in the mini stocks, huh?
And me and I got two sons, but one don't go too much. He goes more now than he did when he's young.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he's, you know, married and had a baby then, but my oldest son doesn't have no children, so, you know, me and him just went every time, and he did all the setup and all the chassis and all I had to do is get out there and try to get her from the back to the front.
That's amazing. So that they sort of forced you to move on to the late models?
Oh, they was canceled, you know, long, so we'd have have our banquet. And they give me a diploma that I done graduated from mini stock school.
That's funny.
And then at one time I bought some limited stuff, and I was going to move. And then Danny says, "Dad, we're happy with what we're doing. We can build our own motors." At the time, we built our own motors for, you know, if we had $500 in the whole motor, you know, we expurged. And, you know, we built our own stuff, and it just kept on and on and on, and it just eventually got down to the point that he just didn't want me to run them no more.
Yeah.
And I picked up a limited with no motor, and then I started, you know, up till the last year, or up till 2006, I built, you know, I had Dennis Boyd do the machine work, but I would do all the building right, you know, in my house.
Right.
But now we're running them spec motors, and we're not allowed to touch him.
So between those 2 years, what, that was like in the early 80s, you're talking about the 2 years where you won like over 50 features?
I would say that was probably in the 90s.
Oh, that was in the early 90s.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
I drove the Limited for 5 years and won the championship at Speed World all 5 years and championship at Mews Smyrna all 5 years.
Yeah.
They said when I left the mini stocks, I would never win again. And I showed them not only did I win feature nights, but I won the championship all 5 years that I ran it.
Wow.
And, you know, quite a few, I don't know, two or three speed weeks we've won. Because I've got, you know, one time I got a whole complete body, and one time I got a Griffin radiator and four, you know, just a whole lot of stuff that they were. Back then, they used to give a lot of stuff away for winning speed weeks. You know, a lot of your vendors would, you know, donate stuff. And I won a good share of it.
You know, that's amazing. So you went, there must have been, who was in the last couple of years you were racing many stocks? Who was the bridesmaid? Who was
Ted Fulpius was one of them.
Who?
Ted Fulpius was one of them.
Okay.
I ran with him a lot.
And he still races a little bit, don't he? Is it?
Yeah, he races. He's got two new cars coming out for this year.
Yeah.
Jerry Simons. We've had some hellacious rivals, me and Jerry Simons have.
Wow.
Another good, you know, competition on the track. I ran a little bit, but very little bit with Dan Partage, you know, which is a radio announcer.
Uh-huh.
I was just more, pretty less, just sort of like getting, when I first went to New Smyrna, I built a front wheel drive Rabbit. And, you know, I was having problems. I was the only one there with a front wheel drive. Well, it was one other car there. You know, I was having problems getting this front wheel drive to work on that big track. And after a while, I got that thing working pretty good, and I got it where it would run up front. And then they told me I couldn't run front wheel drive no more. So I bought a Pinto. And the very first time I drove the Pinto at Speed World, I won.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. So you moved into the late models, won five championships in a row. Was that at New Smyrna?
New Smyrna and Speed World.
And Speed World?
Friday night at Speed World. Change the gears in them, go run New Smyrna the next night.
And you got championship. Oh, so between those two tracks, you won 50% of the championships.
Yep. the five years I drove it, I won every year.
So what is the secret, you know, to Bobby Sears' success back then? I mean, you know, we'll get up to the present time here in a little bit, but back then when you were running, I mean, you ran 13, 14 years in the mini stocks, extremely successful. Dominant, it sounds as. And then you go to late models and you do the same thing. And you know you didn't have a lot of, you know, you didn't have the high dollar stuff and you built your own stuff. What was your secrets to your success that is there something there that other people today could use?
Well, the biggest thing we've done is we work on our cars all the time. And when we get to track, we don't work on them. You see these people come to the track, and they get their car off the trailer. Back then, hardly anybody had an enclosed trailer. You know, everybody had open-wheel trailers.
Mm-hmm.
They got their car off the trailer, and they were adjusting this and adjusting that and welding on this and repairing that and setting their tow and camber. See, we did all that stuff before we got there. You know, we make sure that, you know, like when I got ready to go to Speed World, I would jack it up, get the gears out of it, put the gears in it, get the oil in it. I'm a fanatic, so I change engine oil a lot, so I don't, you know, ruin my motor by just running it till it goes sour and have to build a new one. I did a, you know, I don't know how often, but adjusted, you know, the valves often like you're supposed to. But the biggest thing, camber, caster, bump steer, we kept learning and studying, and we're still learning today, Jack. I mean, we learn things today yet on bump steer and center gravity of the car, which is so important to get around these tracks. But that was the biggest thing back then is we worked on our cars all the time. When we got to the track, we were ahead of all those people because they were working on their cars at the track.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'd all moan and groan, you know, because we, you know, especially in the mini stock days, we'd go out there and blister them, and you're cheating. Well, I've been torn down five times, and they couldn't find nothing.
Yeah.
You know, car was legal.
Yeah, it's all about preparation, and that would
preparation.
Be. Preparation. Yeah.
And trying to learn. I've done stupid things like, you know, put a jack on top of the roof and try to push the car down the way I thought it was going through the turn so I could see how much coil wrap I had and how much shock compression or how much it was pushing the shock down. I try to duplicate what that car was doing so I could try to figure out. I've laid underneath these cars with a creeper so long and went to go to sleep just trying to figure out, you know, what I need to do to make this car go where it'll go through the turns. Because, you know, anybody can go down a straightaway.
So
if you can't go through the turns, you don't win.
Right.
And yeah. When you win a lot, all they give you is the outside. So we learned how to make our cars run on the outside. Because if they give me the outside, I'll blow right around you.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of that, particularly as the classes move upward in dollars. They tend to be more and more bottom groove.
More and more bottom groove. I think New Smyrna, when that track gets broken a little bit more, you may see it a little bit more. I think a lot of it is, I don't know if they're not quite sure of themselves. Wayne Anderson will jump up on the outside.
Oh, boy, I was just thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about Charlotte County Speedway, for instance, is one of the flatter tracks. It's not that it's flat, but it's one of the flatter tracks around Florida. And I remember we were just talking with somebody the other night about that. Wayne Anderson is the only person that I can remember. I'm sure there's some others, but he's the only person I can remember. He just jumps up on that outside down there one night. And
Wayne Anderson's a race car driver.
Smoked him, you know. Yeah.
He demands himself to drive that car to the front.
Yeah.
Danny thinks he's one of the best drivers out there. Now, they're some good drivers, don't get me wrong. They're some good drivers, you know.
Right.
Fritz and Rogers and all them guys I've been around. I've been knowing Rogers. I knew Rogers when he used to run, when he used to take the car to Volusia, he wasn't old enough to drive it.
Yeah.
So,
He's a big fan of yours, you know.
Is that right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah,
he's
I talk to him a lot.
He's a big fan of yours.
But get up on the outside is, I think a lot of it, too, is the amount of cost of these cars today. You get up on the outside, you don't make it work. Or you get up there and you boat tangle or something other, you got a $40,000-$50,000 car in the wall.
Yeah.
So they tend to follow each other and try to make you make a mistake or, you know, maybe get that, you know, left rear quarter a little bit and get you loose or get you looking in at mirror, then try to power up under you. And that's one thing you got to do a lot, like at Ponte Gorda. Because last time we was at Ponte Gorda, we sat on the pole down there.
Yeah.
That's a good little track, but it's a rooting track. You got to root because it's hard to get your car to handle on the outside of that track. And it's, like you say, semi-flat. So if you run off in there and, you know, unless you just really get tight and rub paint, it's hard to pass at that track.
All right, Bobby, we're going to root on out of here for just a few minutes, take a couple of minutes to talk about our sponsors, Evergreen Development and Construction and Dayton Andrews Dodge, whose generous support makes this and other Short Track America programs possible. We'll be right back with more from Bobby Sears, much more from Bobby Sears.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen.
CarNet.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNet.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNet.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Karnak gets it done.
It's no wonder everybody says nobody beats a Dayton Andrews Dodge deal. I mean nobody. They must sell 200 cars, trucks, and vans to break all sales records. In order to do that, they'll guarantee $1,000 if they can't beat any deal you bring into them on any new or used vehicle in stock. Every new Dodge drastically reduced. Every used vehicle drastically reduced. How about no money down? Take advantage of these great offers with lender's approval. $1,000 guaranteed includes rebates and they reserve the right to buy back the vehicle from the selling dealer to give to their customer at a lower price. Ask about the $4,000 minimum trade-in allowance. Check out the Dodge Caravans, the Durangos, and the Neon. This week, Dayton Andrews Dodge is offering the lowest prices and also no money down. Call 321-0500. See that the Dayton Andrews Dodge way beats all the other ways to shop for a vehicle. 22nd Avenue and US 19 in St. Petersburg, Dayton Andrews Dodge.
We're back here on this edition of Inside Florida Racing. We're talking with Bobby Sears, the fascinating career and almost a legend in Florida racing on the Florida's East Coast at the New Smyrna Speedway and Orlando Speed World. We'll get back at it here with Bobby Sears. And now Danny is your son?
Danny's my oldest son, yes.
And tell us a little bit about him.
He's been working with Chrysler. Both of my boys work for Chrysler.
Uh-huh.
I work for BMW. He's been working, for Chrysler for I don't know how many years. And he's a front end genius. I mean, they get a car that somebody's did alignment on it and the customer comes back and it still pulls or don't steer right or don't handle right. Maybe they'll get that guy to look at it again. He comes back again. They say, hey, Dan, straighten this thing out for this guy. I mean, that's how he does front ends. I mean, he knows front ends. And a lot of times he'll look at a car and he'll say, Dad, you see that thing right there? I think he's got 2 degrees caster in. He can see it.
Yeah.
But, he's married and, they don't have any children. So he spends a lot of time with me on these cars. And, she goes a lot, too.
Yeah. And how old is Danny?
Danny's 42.
Yeah, and your other son?
He's 38.
And his name is?
His name is Steven.
Does Steven work with you, too, then, on the cars?
He works with us more now than he, when you're married and got a kid, it's a little bit different. Yeah,
sure.
He works with us quite a bit. And he's starting to go into the track quite a bit, too, with us, and learning, what we do. But Danny's the crew chief. He's the man that tells Rich when he gets up there. He says, "Listen, I'm your eyes. You don't need that mirror."
Yeah. So you got up to after you won all the championships in the late models. Is that when the point where you decided to go be a car owner?
I was on a speed week one night, and on the first night, Randy Dye and a whole bunch of us just got tore all to pieces. I mean, on the first lap, about 30 cars there coming up off of two. Somebody hooked me in the left rear wheel. And when I got done, I was down to number 3. Car tore all to pieces. So we went home and got the backup car and just never jilled that time. So about Wednesday or so, we just said, well, to heck with it. We just loaded all of our stuff up and went to get the cars ready, for the regular season. Because usually a couple of weeks, the regular season opened up.
Right.
And I just wasn't comfortable no more. At that time, I was, I'm 60, going on 63 now, so I was, up there. My eyes wasn't as good and sharp as they used to be, and I could see myself not driving. I see myself backing off, and I could tell if somebody up front of me was wiggling, but I wasn't close enough to capitalize because I've already been backed off. And I put Michael Williams in the car for a year, and we won the Sarah with him.
It was the Sarah late model series.
Yeah, we won that, me and Michael in my car. And
you won a championship in the Sarah deal?
Yeah, we won the championship with Sarah.
That was what?
Michael Williams.
That must have been, like 98, 99?
Probably in that area, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably right in that area. Had a big banquet at the Elks Club over in Cocoa.
Yeah.
That
was where Rick Day was running it at that point?
I believe you're right. Yep,
yeah.
Rick Day was running it. Yep, you're right.
So then...
But he got pretty deep in at the time with that bunch of the South 40.
Yes.
And they didn't want him driving a super late model and driving my Limited 2. And I had told Danny a long time ago, because we've been watching his kid, I said, if I ever quit and I don't sell them out, I'm going to put that kid in a race car.
And you're talking about?
I'm talking about Rich.
Rich Clouser.
And we called him up one time and met him out of Speed World. And Michael took the car out first, and he went out there and, popped off 15 or 20 laps, put Rich in it, and about the 8th lap, he was turning times faster than Mike was.
And Rich Clouser,
he's a born frickin' racer.
Yeah, and Rich Clouser has won in 1996 and 1990, or 1995 and 1996, the Goodyear Challenge Late Model Series in Florida. That's pretty amazing. And so you weren't working with him when he was racing the street stocks or like that,
no,
right?
No, I was not. I'm just just watch him and he's what he won. I don't know how many he won there in 1 year. He won so many in 1 year, it was unreal.
Yeah, it always amazed me. Because I, at the time I lived in Bradenton, near DeSoto Speedway, and it always amazed me when I would hear that Rich Clouser, who I'd heard of from New Smyrna and Orlando and all that, but when I realized that he was coming all the way over to Bradenton every week to race, every week, that was pretty amazing to me.
They too didn't want him no more at New Smyrna because he won every night.
Exactly.
And they tore him down and tore him down and tore him down, just you know, after a while it gets aggravating. You know, you just keep getting torn down and they don't see nothing. They see the same old motor that they saw last week. You know, everybody thinks it done this or done that or whatever.
And to the race fan, a teardown is just a teardown. Tell us, what's it like? What is it like to have your car torn down, and what do you got to go through?
Well, I haven't been torn down on, you know, any of the limited or anything, but on the mini stock days, you know, I'd win, and, you know, you'd stop and get your picture and your trophy and, you know, and talk to the crowd. And we like to, I used to just thank the crowd, you know, and sometimes I would, you know, thank the good Lord for being there. And then we'd, you know, go back to, you know, get in the car. Usually I let Danny drive it around all the time. He'd drive it to scales. Well, when I get to the scales, somebody's already there with a piece of paper, and I don't know how much money it was at the time, $125 or something or other. And they wanted to, you know, tear the motor down. And, you know, we pulled the motor out. One time we pulled a Ted Pulpius, and a whole bunch of them tore us down one night. And we pulled the motor out of it, pulled the head off of it, and pulled the valves out of it. Ted Pulpius took a steel wire brush and cleaned the valves. And when he cleaned the valves, it said FOMOCO, Ford Motor Company, right in the middle of the frickin' valves. And Wayne Graham says, there ain't nothing wrong with that. So they thought sure we was running cheater rods and all of this kind of stuff. So we pulled a pan off of it, pulled a rod out of it, showed them that it was a stock Pinto rod. You know, had, I think at the time, either Weisco or Ross pistons, but pistons was legal, whatever you ran. You know, showed them that the crankshaft was still the Pinto crank, still had the counterweight on it that weren't shaved or cut or nothing. And the last time we got tore down, Wayne Graham says, there's nothing wrong with this guy. It's all legal. Let's leave him alone. Let's go home. And what really feels good is when they announce, you know, that there was a protest put up on Bobby Steers' car, the number 9 car, and was found legal. And that, you know, that settles into that stand up there more than anything. If they found, said Bobby Steers was found illegal, he had an illegal crankshaft, then they could say, oh, my gosh, all of them win. That time he won 9 in a row. He had that illegal crank in there. But when they announced that it was legal, and you get his money for protesting, you get the money that you won, too, and you still get to keep that trophy. That's a good feeling, although you got to go and buy probably, at that time, $30, $35 worth of gas to put it all back together.
Well, that was my point. It's like these days, when you get your motor torn down, if you get a real, real serious teardown, you're talking, it's costing you a lot of money and time.
Yeah. If they tear down one of our motors, of course, with these spec motors, you know, if they tear them down, they got to have, you know, either Prooms has got to be there or Progressive's got to be there, Pope's got to be there, tear them motors all the way down to the crankshaft.
Right.
When you unloosen the rod on one of these motors, you got to change rod bolts. You can't use that stuff over.
Yeah.
You know, you break that rod loose and you go out, you know, and then put it all back together and you go out there and that rod bolt stretch, that dumb stretch that's, you know, normal stretches that it's supposed to be and a proper torque is supposed to be on it. And then you retorque it again and you go out there and the molecules of that rod bolt have been stretched beyond to where it was at. It breaks off, then you done bought yourself another $15,000 or $20,000 motor.
Yeah.
You know, so tear down, can get to be pretty crucial on you know, all your big stuff, your big V8 stuff.
Yeah.
The Pinto stuff was, you know, so.
So are you a fan of the like spec motors or crate motors and that sort of thing?
Yes, though? I am.
Yeah.
The reason why is we're trying, you know, people come to see action on the track. They don't want to see somebody, you know, just run off and leave it. So a spec motor gets everybody in the same area in motors. You don't have one that's, his head's has cut 30,000ths more than yours, and maybe he brought his piston up, you know, 100,000ths out of the block more than you did yours, and so on and so on. Well, the spec motor, if they police it now, they got to police it.
Right.
And you already hear rumors, you know, that these heads has done this, done that, but they got to police it. You know, if you run a spec motor, it's got to be a spec motor. And what that does, that gives everybody a level feel of their motors. And then if you outrun somebody, it's how you handle. It's how that hard work you do to get your car to go through the turn better or be able to jump up on the outside and pinch that guy down and drive off of him, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm pretty well for a spec motor.
Yeah.
I think Fritz's motor was, what, $43,000, I think, his last motor. It blew up during Speed Week. A spec motor, a super late model spec motor, is less than $16,000.
Right. So now, when did Rich Clouser start driving for you?
I think this is going to be his fourth year, I believe, now.
And you started right with the late models?
Yeah, put him right in the late models. And
So we
run some Friday night and Saturday night shows, and then, you know, went right over into the Goodyear series right when it started.
So the first couple of years, what was that learning experience like, you working with Rich?
Well, first year, Rich is the type of guy that was learned to drive all of his time to drive and try to win, but bring the car back with all the fenders on. So Rich is the type of guy that biggest majority of time you don't have to put a whole bunch of parts back on the car because he knows like I'm gonna bring this up like Pete Orr. Pete Orr used to know how to drive a car and not get it destroyed. But working with him was, you know, the difference in horsepower, difference in, you know, how quick the car gets down into the turn, how much brake you got to use. But the first year he ran rookie of the year, and we lost the championship to Artuso out of Canada by 16 points.
Okay.
And we would have had that night. I believe that Saturday night at New Smyrna, I believe we would have had it because we were leading the race, and a back burner car blew a motor going into three. Rich slid all the way through it, come out of right by the gate where the wrecker comes in, out of round four, and hit the wall. But Jason Boyd and Joe Boyd and I don't know who all back there, they all destroyed their cars. Jason's car got hit so hard, I think the rear end busted in it. And Artuso got tore up real bad. But we went in, had the wrecker tow it in. I put the Ben Hole, me and Dennis Boyd, a whole bunch of us put the rear end all back in it. And Michael Sean and a whole bunch of up there put tie rods and sleeves on it. We got back out, but Artuso got back out too. So, it was, you know, as long as he got back out, we had no chance that we could win that first year.
Yeah. That was his rookie year.
And then we won the next year, and then we won the backup year right behind it. And if the good Lord's willing, we're going to try to win the third one.
Yeah. So he was rookie of the year in a couple of championships, and you're getting ready to go try it again. And last year was in 2006, as you come down to the end, it really didn't look like Rich Clouser was going to repeat. What got things turned around?
Well, what we started out with, we started out at Speed World, and we started second on the bottom. Winchell was on the pole, and Hess was on the outside pole. Well, Hess either missed a gear or Joe Winchell.
Yeah, oh, yes.
You don't fool that guy.
No.
And I heard Hess and him talking. Well, I'm going to try to outjump him. You don't fool Joe Winchell. He's been around forever. And Joe come up off the thing. He got a good start. And Hess didn't get a start or he done something. And when he did, he powered the gear and he drove right into our right front tire. And it spun us around and around and around. And we spun across the finish line backwards. Well, we done run down to the trailer. I got the jack all ready and Danny got, we had tie rods and stuff all made up. You know, we got a whole tie rod assembly for the left side and a whole tie rod assembly for the right side. All we do is break the nut loose, screw the whole unit in it. We was ready. Rich, we got around there. Rich says, don't worry about it. They sheared the center link off the Pittman arm. We said, oh, damn. So we didn't even get, all we got is maybe 60 feet. So we was in a hole right off.
Right.
But we kept digging and digging and kept getting seconds and, you know, go to Bronson and get second and just kept running and running. But we had, the people were in lead had some trouble too. You know, Cope blew a motor one time up at Bronson.
Travis Cope.
Yeah, when he blew a motor, that sort of took him out of the contention. And Winchell got tore all to pieces. That took him out of contention. Then Winchell come to Lake City, and the battery busted, and that took him out of contention. So, you know, you got to be there. You know, you just keep going and going and going until the last race. And we went into the last race with a pretty good lead. We had to finish, I think, 11th or better, and I think we finished third or whatever it was.
Yeah. That's an amazing story. And then, and Rich Clouser is just a real good kid, too. I mean, he's a nice young man.
He's a well-mannered kid. I mean, you know, he's been brought up to, you know, he has a lot of respect for people.
So, now this year, you know, every year Carnac.com gives us, presents an award at the Pete Orr Memorial, and that all stems from, you know, when Pete Orr was racing around Florida and helping other people win races and championships and whatnot, you know, obviously he was a very popular person by all accounts. And when he unfortunately and unexpectedly died in 2002, we felt that the only way to really, the thing that we could do to keep that spark of that Pete Orr seemed to have alive was to present a sportsmanship award, because we felt that that's really what Pete Orr
stood for in so many ways, and each year we've given that award. And this year, Bobby Sears, you were the recipient of that award at the presented at the Pete Orr Memorial 100 at the last night of Speed Weeks in, at New Smyrna. What's that mean to you?
It means a lot. What it means is all these years that I've been in racing and still involved in racing, you know, with the young driver, we don't go out there and beat on people. You know, sometimes you go get into something. Now, don't get me wrong. You go get into something. We got into a little skirmish down the Lakeland one time. But, you know, we don't, you know, go, you know, get up on the side of somebody and body slam them and all this kind of stuff. Years ago when I used to win, the fans would just clap and holler and, you know, and even when I handed that award, you hear a lot of them people up there hollering and carrying on. And then when I walked up there, a lot of them old people, you know, shook hands with me and said, boy, I wish he was back racing again. And, you know, they don't realize that youth is so much better than age. And, you know, just kept talking, and I kept shaking hands with different people. I don't really know them, but I've seen them. That's what you get out of it, is knowing that you went to the track, you did your job of racing that car and putting it up front for the hard work you put in it, then you did your job for that crowd up there, for the people in the stands that, you know, I used to have people out of Speed World, but they would come over from Tampa somewhere, I don't remember exactly where, somewhere over that direction, and they would bring a couple, and they would bid, you know, who did dishwasher, who did the wash the dishes or something other, and she would always pick the nine, and her husband said that she had them all set up. You know, those type of rumors and stuff you hear just makes you feel so good that people, you know, thought of you that much, you know, in the stand.
Right. So Rich Clouser drives the number 9. You know, that's the number of your car. That's your number.
I've had that number 9 ever since we started.
Yeah.
You know, it's been around forever.
Is there a significance to that?
No. I think it was 9, 11, and something another. And Danny said, let's just take the single-digit number.
Right.
And not knowing that that was Dale Elliott's number, and I think the world of Dale Elliott.
Yeah.
But to associate it with Dale Elliott, it didn't come up at that time, but I'm glad it is. Because I think, I just think the 9's a good number. It's done well for us.
Yeah.
I've represented it well. And I've got a super late model, if I can, you know, get a motor for it, and it's going to have a 9 on it, too. Although I know there's a lot of 9s out there, so we may have to make it a 9X or a 9B or a 9 Rich or something another. But yeah, 9 will go on it.
That's what I was
If we have to, it'll be 9 something.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to ask you, as, you know, you've been, obviously you did the mini stocks till you couldn't do it anymore. They wouldn't let you do it anymore. And then you did successful in your own right in the late models. So you produced a winner. When are you going to go to the super late models, or is that a...
I've got one of my original cars, one of the cars that I won all 5 years with that I drove, which is an old third design Hal. I sold it to Allie Owen, and I got her, third in championship at New Smyrna. But I had to work hard on it because, you know, the car got wrecked a lot. Plus, New Smyrna wasn't kind to her. I mean, them guys really worked her over pretty bad. Yeah. But I was always, you know, putting rear clips on it and, you know, just putting a lot of stuff on it. But we got her third in the championship, I think, at New Smyrna. And then when she got in this deal where she went up to North Carolina or whatever, I got that car back. And I put, you know, it's got a, you know, a two-barrel motor in it. But it's all the machine work is done by Boyd. And, you know, I put a rear clip on it and put a brand-new ABC body on it. And a lot of parts that we had from these other cars I used, and I got this car all back together. So I've got this car up for sale. I've got a few calls on it. It's all set up for New Smyrna. And what I'm hoping it'll hurry up and sell, because I already got crews building the motor for the super late model. But hopefully what we're hoping on is start running the super late model at New Smyrna and enter in the Bright House.
Huh.
And run the Goodyear Challenge this year, finish this year off and ease the super late model in at New Smyrna on the Goodyear on the Bright House Challenge race. And or any other time to run in there. To say, will we enter in the Governor's Cup? I don't want to say that just yet. I don't know.
Right.
That would be a dream of mine, is to, you know, I think that's just such a prestige race.
Yeah, buddy.
That you can go out there and you've seen time after time, is if you go out there and keep your nose clean, the way Rich does, you can finish in the top 10 in the Governor's Cup.
Yeah, I remember.
I think that would just be a feather in both of our caps.
Yeah, I remember one year, Bobby, it was like, I think it was like 1999, but there was a guy who was, I can't even think of his name right now, but it was a guy who always finishes at the back of the pack, and it was his first trip out there to that kind of big event, and I told him that exact thing. I said, all you got to do is run last. Just run around the track for 200 laps. If you finish the race, you might be in the top 10. He ended up finishing ninth because there was only 9 cars that finished.
Right, exactly. You've seen that time after time after time. But what we'd like to do is and a good, a lot, some of it hinges on getting this car sold.
Right.
I've had somebody really wants the car, that he wants. He's got a kid, I think he's 17, 18 years old, that he wants me to keep it up for him. And to keep my cars up, I just can't do that. It's a lot of, plus I'm getting older.
Right.
A lot of work to, you know, keep these cars up to run the Goodyear Challenge. You know, we run the 10th at Lakeland, then we turn right around and run the 17th at New Smyrna. Then we turn right around and run the 6th or something other at Bronson.
That's three.
I've got two cars, but you can't spend a lot of time on somebody else's car, especially if they tear the clip off of it. You know, like I told him, if the car got wrecked bad, my cars will go come first. I can't jump on that car, you know, work all day at Fields BMW and then come home and work on that car trying to get it, you know, back to the racetrack. And that's why it's still sitting here in the yard. It's just a little too hard to do.
Yeah, so this year it's 2007. It's go after another title with Rich Clouser in the Goodyear Challenge. And maybe next year do a little or maybe even later this year you might.
We're going to try to enter the first race, I think, is in April. What is it? I think the first Bright House race is in April.
Yeah, the Bright House Challenge Series is, what, 50-lap races at New Smyrna. And do they run any of them in Orlando?
No, they don't.
It's just all New Smyrna.
No, all that's just right there at New Smyrna.
Six-race series, and I think last year B.J. McLeod
that is correct.
Came out and took that little deal there.
Right.
That would be a good one. That would be a good,
you know,
good deal.
You know, enter them, and, you know, that'll get his feet wet.
Yep.
This particular car that I've got, he has done one 250-lappers at SpeedWorld in it. So he knows the car, other than we'll change the seat in it, because somebody else drove it, you know. But it's a Hampke car. It's a good piece. I bought it complete without motor, because that's the only way I could afford to buy it. And hopefully when I get this other car sold, you know, I'm getting a spec motor from Crooms to go in it. And, you know, I don't need to buy a whole lot because it comes with the headers, the radiator. You know, it comes complete, less motor.
Yeah. All right, Bob, we're going to take a short break here. Back in a few minutes, we're going to talk about the state of Florida racing and how you see it today and how tough it is to win. We'll be right back.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. C.J. Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-2 202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
It's no wonder everybody says nobody beats a Dayton Andrews Dodge deal. I mean nobody. They must sell 200 cars, trucks, and vans to break all sales records. In order to do that, they'll guarantee $1,000 if they can't beat any deal you bring into them on any new or used vehicle in stock. Every new Dodge drastically reduced. Every used vehicle drastically reduced. How about no money down? Take advantage of these great offers with lender's approval. $1,000 guaranteed includes rebates and they reserve the right to buy back a vehicle from the selling dealer to give to their customer at a lower price. Ask about the $4,000 minimum trade-in allowance. Check out the Dodge Caravans, the Durangos, and the Neons. This week, Dayton Andrews Dodge is offering the lowest prices and also no money down. Call 321-0500. See that the Dayton Andrews Dodge way beats all the other ways to shop for a vehicle. 22nd Avenue and US 19 in St. Petersburg, Dayton Andrews Dodge.
We're back here on this edition of Inside Florida Racing. We're talking with Bobby Sears. Bobby, what do you think? You know, in a lot of these races, I know Fast Car has taken their Sunbelt Series and cut a lot of those 125-lap races back to 100 laps, although they still have several 200-lap events. A lot of these super late model events are either 125 or 200 laps. And, you know, you see so many cars don't finish the race, not because they wrecked, but they have mechanical problems of one kind or another. And is that because of money and the parts you buy, or is it just preparation and not being ready?
Well, I think Jack, is two things. One thing is, I think a lot of it is, a lot of your cars are running in the back, don't have the latest, or the, like we started off earlier in this, with technology. They probably got the older style rear end, the old Franklin or the old Winters, which is a good piece. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a dinosaur piece. But when you run something, or somebody has run something a whole year or so, that unit's got to be pulled down. You got to pull it down and change the pinion bearings in it, you know, and you know, reset the preload on it, get the backlash somewhere in the ballpark of where it's got to be. They don't work on a lot of their stuff. If you see a lot of the stuff, what they broke is, you know, it just blows my mind when somebody goes out there and he loses a wheel bearing.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, after every 100 lap, we packed a wheel bearing. After every 100 lap, we drained all the grease out of the transmission. We drained all the grease out of the rear end. I know that Mobil 1 oil is expensive, don't get me wrong, but you got to finish. You got to finish a race before you can win.
Right.
If you're not there at the end, then, you know, you haven't done anything. So a lot of these people, you'd be surprised at people out there that don't even grease a car. And you'd be surprised at people out there that don't check the ball joints. Don't look for cracks. You got to, every time we pull the wheels off, we look the hub real close. And we're going to have to look closer and closer now because Mia Smyrna is paved. And during speed week, they put a lot of stress on a lot of stuff on the right front of those cars. David broke up upper control arm.
Yeah.
203M broke a lower control arm. But you got to look at that stuff. You got to look at all of the hubs. Make sure there ain't a stress crack, especially if you know you bumped the wall a little bit, or you rubbed the wall a little bit, or you got underneath somebody and y'all rubbed pretty hard. That next week, before that car goes, you need to look at all that stuff. You need to look and see if that tie rod is in the spindle right, and maybe unloosen it and turn it and see if it wobbles. If it wobbles, it needs to be replaced. And that's what you get into. A lot of people don't check or not repairing their cars for a race. And then it does come down to money. It naturally comes down to money.
Yeah.
You know, back, you probably could bought ball joints, you know, quite a few years ago for, you know, $10. Now ball joints are expensive.
Yeah, and so it does still come down to a lot of it is money, but you can't overstate the importance of being prepared and taking care of your equipment either. So.
Right. How many times have you seen cars out there and they got water in the fuel cell?
Yeah.
You know, where's these cars been? I mean, are they garaged or are they kept? And if somebody races a car and leaves it in the trailer all week and then goes back to the racetrack, that's what I was telling you earlier. A lot of people put their car in a trailer, and when they get back to the track, that's when they start working on their car. But that, how many times do you open a trailer up and look underneath the fuel cell and water bubbles just laying all over it? And you wonder why their fuel cell gets water in it.
You know, there's another...
You got to fill it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there's another topic, too, I wanted to ask you about. Now, I'm asking you this primarily because you have been around a long time, and you've always been at the top in terms of winning races and being successful. What is all this deal about traction control, and why isn't it just legal, or what is the deal with all that?
Well, I don't know. I know about it, and I don't know how you go about finding out. You know, I hear it every time I go to track. I'll guarantee you that car's got it on there. I'll bet you $100 that car's got it on there. And if you let me have that car in 2 hours, I'll find it. I hear that all the time. But what traction control is when you get going down that back straightaway, you know, full speed, and you drop off into turn, you got your car where it'll go in good, and when you map that throttle, it signals a signal to the MSD box, and it actually changes or it slows the timing down until that car gets up out of there, and then the traction control comes out of it. That's why you see so many cars go through the turn, you think, real great. Now, what, you know, everybody in the world tells me that different cars have got it on there, but they got this traction control down now, whereas all you need is a fountain pen in your pocket.
Right.
And you can actually signal down to that MSD box. Or you can have a one of your pit crews set up in the stands and just push a button, and your traction control is on.
Yeah.
That's one I've always, it's just been curious because, you know, I'm not, personally, I'm not like, you know, really technically oriented here towards the, you know, I mean, I know what a carburetor is, you know what I mean? But
right.
It always amazes me that, because what you said, it's always talked about, but I've never heard anybody ever being caught with traction control. It's like,
I don't know if I ever remember him saying, yeah, we found this.
Yeah, I've never heard of it being. So I was just
on the pole with Ponte Gorda. He says, all right, I want you to take it over there and put it on the jack stand. I want all four wheels out of it. And he crawled all over that car, went down all the brake lines, wanted to know where the line off the vent line off the rear end went. It was some extra wires inside of the cockpit area. He and almost had us to pull the seat out so he could trace the wires looking for traction control. And, you know, we didn't have half the motor the door had. You know, Steve Dorr had 10 times more motor than we did, but our car would go through the turn. It would go through the turn without spinning the right rear coming up off the turn.
Right.
And, you know, that's, we just, you know, our car just fit that track real good. We just pop off a good, you know, good two laps and set on the pole with it. You know, we didn't have no traction control over it, but they looked everywhere. Matter of fact, he was even bleeding when he got done. He was looking so much for traction control.
It's funny. It is. It's almost a comic routine.
It is.
The whole thing. But I've had some interest. I always like to ask guys that have been around a long time about it because it's to me, it's just one of those. It's a funny thing about racing, or so I find it humorous. But you know, it's been great talking with you, Bobby. And I'll tell you, you guys, I wish you the best of luck here in 2007. And you know, I hope this is the year maybe that maybe Rich can get some sponsorship breakthroughs on that car, because
it is hard. I'm gonna tell you, I'm working with someone right now. I worked Seminole Power Sports about off and on for over a month, and he elected to go with two freestyle motorcycles and two drag motorcycles. Of course, you know, they're in the motorcycle business. I can understand that to a degree.
Sure.
But I worked with him, and, you know, and he was all gung-ho and what we were going to do with T-shirts, and we were going to bring the car over there and set it up, and, it, you know, what all we was going to do. And he just wanted the logo on the back of the trailer, not on the side, just the back of the trailer. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, no, I'm sorry, but I'm going to go with this. And then I found out a little bit later that some people from ARCA and ASA were calling him. So I don't know if that influenced.
Well, yeah.
It knocked me out or what.
Yeah, it's.
Allie is helping me on something a little bit. I don't know if it's going to go through or not. It may not. And then I've got another little something I'm working on. Two or three things that Rich has been working on, I don't think any of it's panned out yet.
Yeah.
But it's hard. One of the goals we're going to try to do in this Goodyear series this year is get Rich just a little bit more aggressive. And I don't mean go out there and beat on cars or anything like that, because you see how we race. But you got to get more wins in the win column. You know, that's what a lot of people look at.
Right.
You know, that's where you notice. That's where the people in the stands notice you when you're in the winner's circle holding the flag. They notice you when you're second or third, because that's where we've gotten a lot of seconds and thirds. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the winner's circle is where that's who they remember when they leave the track.
Yeah.
Is who won.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we're going to try to concentrate on that a little bit more this year, especially the earlier part of the year. You know, because you want to look at points the first race, but you got to make moves at the first part of the year, you know, the first few races, and see what you've got, what you can do.
Right.
I hate to say this, but we don't have, of course, Danny believes, he says you make your luck. But we don't have a lot of racetrack luck. We can qualify fifth and they'll draw four. Or we can qualify seventh and they'll draw six.
Yes.
We don't never get to start up front to show what our car will do up there. And then a lot of times, like at Lakeland, we qualified second. We ended up starting fourth. If we could ever get a little bit of that, what they do call track luck, where we could start up there, you know, first or second or somewhere, instead of having to start back there sixth or seventh. And the first few laps, you got to really watch. You know, to get the nose tore off of it or tear the radiator out of it. Because if you do, then you're out. You're over. It's over.
Yeah, you know, Bobby, it's kind of like there's some of us who's just, it's our lot in life to do things the hard way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it is.
But you've made the best of it. There's no doubt about it. Look forward to watching you guys this year. And, you know, keep it up, man. It's a great thing. And congratulations again on the Sportsmanship Award, and keep it up, man.
Okay. It's just me, because I lost my wife 4 years July will be 4 years. I lost her to breast cancer.
Yeah.
So it's just me and the two boys. So, you know, this is where I like to be. You know, you sit around the house, you go crazy. So you'll see us at the track.
All right. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, man. Talk to you later.
Thanks for calling me. I appreciate that dearly.
Bye-bye. And there you have it, Bobby Sears, a champion in every sense of the word. All right, and this is Inside Florida Racing, a Short Track America production, and be sure to check us out on Tuesday night, Real Racing USA, Rick Angies, Bill Green, and myself, Jack Smith, will take you on a tour around the country. We do that every Tuesday night. So I hope you enjoyed the show tonight, and thank you very, very much for supporting Karnak.com, Short Track America, and be sure and keep in mind, if you need a Dodge, Dayton Andrews Dodge. If you need some development done, hey, call Jay Carberry over at Evergreen Construction and Development. See ya.